Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Caged In, as ever brought to you by the Breadcrumbs Collective and hosted by me, Petros Patsilivas. As we wrap up Cagedwary, we look at Cage's first on-screen appearance, not in a film, no, but in a TV pilot for a show that wasn't picked up, The Best of Times. Maybe for them, The Worst of Times. Directed by Don Mercer, it starred Crispin Glover, Jill Shulin, Kevin Cortez, a load of people you've never heard of, and our boy, Nicholas Coppola, as he's credited. To help me decide if this is the best or the worst of times, it's both members of the Brighton two-piece indie punk band Regal Cheer, Max Cleworth and Harry Munir. How are you, fellas?
Hello, mate. Well. How's it going?
So, yeah, I thought let's get to it, why you guys are here. I thought, what better way, seeing as I've never covered The Best of Times on the podcast. I don't know why. Maybe as a purist, it's just the movies. We're not talking about the TV. Watching The Best of Times would be perfect because there's a lot of songs in this. Obviously, being a band, mm-hmm. could probably give us some insights into whether these are stone cold classics or just should be expunged from the record books, and we should never hear of these songs ever again. And obviously, this is Cage's first foray into something. And for you guys, like, yeah, you're on the precipice of your first album titled Can. So can you tell us a little bit of background on the album, kind of the genesis of it?
I mean, me and Harry started writing stuff in like late 2019. And then just basically since then, I feel like we've probably written about 30 songs. A lot of them are probably
rubbish,
yeah. And they haven't seen the light of day. I mean, they're probably somewhere in the abyss, much like The Best of Times. But no one's really gonna look them out, because back then we had like dodgier teeth, and you know, we just haven't really found our feet on cinema. Harry hadn't changed his name yet, that sort of thing. We did two EPs, then just wrote an album, kind of nothing crazy.
But all the songs are really short, so EPs felt a bit of a waste of time, not The Best of Times. So we're like, let's just write an album next.
And it makes sense as well. All really, really short songs. This is probably the shortest thing you've covered, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I haven't.
About 48 minutes long or something.
I haven't yet covered the fake trailer for The Werewolves of the SS, which was a part of the Grindhouse experience. So, you know, like, there's the Death Proof and Planet Terror.
Oh, yeah.
There was a load of fake trailers that went in there, and Nicolas Cage plays Fu Manchu in like...
Is that all right?
No. It was a different time. It was like it was the late 2000s. So it was a very different era to now. Like,
it wasn't questionable then.
No. Times have progressed.
If Gwen Stefani can get away with it, I'm sure Nicolas Cage can too.
Harajuku Gao and old Nick Cage Fu Manchu. Yeah, it's a different time, and he's Cage is no hollaback girl either. But yeah, and obviously, yeah, this being a short thing, I thought, yeah, it'd be perfect. You guys have got short punk songs, and like, yeah, we're like, I've listened to the album. Like, I remember Max sent it to me. I don't know. So how, yeah. I feel like I heard this album ages ago.
We've had it for a while, yeah. Yeah, they recorded it in January of 2022.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just been trying to release it since then, really. But everything takes ages in the music industry, apparently. So, yeah, we're really impatient, so it's been difficult to sit on it.
And we're also big on dopamine and compliments. So, yeah. So you know, just giving it to people far too early. Essentially, anyone who asked, really.
As soon as we got it back, we were just too excited to sit on it. So we just sent it to everybody that we knew.
Yeah, and that's probably going to be very detrimental to the streams.
But. Yeah. Yeah, the only people that would have listened to it have already heard it. But yeah,
nothing new. Well, it's quite cool as well that you're that we're on the first ever thing Cage has done, because I was the very first ever guest on this podcast.
That is true. It's a return, two times return for Max and a first time for Harry.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, because it is your first time here, Harry, I just kind of need to ask you a couple of like preliminary questions about your kind of relationship with Nicolas Cage, as a film watcher. Are you a fan of Nicolas Cage? I kind of get the vibe you're not.
Like, I like him as a personality. I know more of it as a personality than as film star. I'm a very bad film watcher. I actually don't think I've seen many films, and I was trying to think today what films I've seen him in, and the list was maybe it was one hand, you know. I think I've seen Kick-Ass. Okay. That's maybe about it.
What was your have you got lasting impressions of Kick-Ass, or?
I think he was good in it. Yeah, it was great. I watched that thing on Netflix, The History of Swearing, that he was in as well. Yeah. It was fun to watch him say cunt, but
I find it interesting because from what I'm gathering from this is like, sounds like a short attention span. It's all making sense. Like,
yeah. What? I turn all films off after 1 minute and 30 seconds.
But ask him about cartoons and he'll fucking cheer you off.
Yeah, I can watch a whole season of Adventure Time in one sitting. But I can't watch a whole movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll watch Futurama again instead.
Well, I think that's the crazy thing with... it feels gross to call it content, but like obviously as films are getting, like at the moment we're going for a spate of no film is shorter than like 2 hours.
I've got a gripe with that, to be honest. It's like if you've got like, historically, if you had like a couple of hours to kill before doing something, you could just like put a film on or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, nah, this is your entire day.
Yeah. I'm just going to look at my phone for 2 hours instead.
I like... Over the Christmas period, I was like, I went to see the new Avatar film more out of a sense of duty as like a film fan.
Yeah.
Like everyone, like you hear people going, oh, it's pushing what cinema can do to like a new level and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess if I like want to be a part of the conversation, I want to see like has James Cameron done it? Has he pushed the barriers of what you can do with film forward? And then I realized, like, I was like, I'm going into like a 3 o'clock screening. I'm not gonna, like, this is like my day.
This
is like I got out of there. It was dark.
Yeah.
You know, like, fuck it.
Do you feel like having that obligation to be part of the conversation kind of thing, because obviously what you do, it's like detrimental to your film enjoying experience? And do you feel like you've seen a load of fucking tripe because of it?
Like, no, because I'd imagine it would be different if like I was really in the nuts and bolts of like if I worked in film. But like I'm just a big film fan, so like obviously like I can watch it through like just I don't know. I think doing this podcast is very much like I have to be like, I'm just gonna sit down and watch this film and not like analyze it and like think, oh, I'm gonna have to talk about this for an hour or so.
Not keep your eyes peeled for Nicolas Cage all the time.
Can I read into the themes and the meanings of stuff? Like, it's just trying to say something about the wider world. Like, it's like, no. Sometimes it's just a load of blue people fucking up a load of like humans. Like, that's all it is. Like,
was it good?
No.
Yeah, I never saw the first one.
Well, I had a realization maybe like half, like I think as I was there, I was like, this is, yeah, like in the cinema, I was like, yeah, this is great. And then half hour afterwards, like, I was like, oh, I don't know which actor played which character in
this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I went onto Wikipedia to have a look. And then I realized, oh, I don't remember any of the character names.
Yeah.
So I don't even know, like, if I could, like, oh, yeah, I remember that actor doing that voice for that character. It was like, I've got no idea. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of like, if you ever get it, like, whilst you're doing something, like, this is the best time ever. And the moment you stop doing it, you're like,
Oh,
this is that's crap.
I mean, I'll tell you what that defines: masturbating.
Yeah. you looked me intently in the eyes there, Max, and I thought you were going to be like, yeah, that's doing a podcast.
You had the post-Avatar clarity.
I did. Yeah. The post-blue nut clarity. Let's... So not a man, like, so a kind of more a fan of the kind of who Nicolas Cage is as a person than Harry.
I think so. Like, I'll gladly watch any film that he's in. Like, it's not like I'm avoiding him, but I just don't watch films in general. It's just like, if he was a voice in a cartoon, I'd probably be a bit more of a fan. But
you liked him in Spider-Man?
I did like, what, which?
He was in the
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, yeah.
Who was he in that?
Spider-Man Noir.
Oh, no, he was the noir one. Yeah. I have, there's two films then.
There you go. That film, he has like six lines, but it's like, has like a whole character arc, and it's so impactful that when, like, he says to him at the end, like, I love you guys.
Yeah.
Like, with that kind of pregnant pause in it, it's like, oh, you really feel that. And it's like, it's kind of really like not had that much screen time, but like, he's the perfect guy for that. Cause I think he understands the history of like the noir cinema and stuff like that he's playing upon. And that is like an app. That's got to be like one of the best animated things for years. Right?
100%. It's like I want to watch it again right now. I forgot how good it was. Like,
you watched that at my old place.
I think I'd watched it and I was like, came around yours. Like, I know it's going to sound crazy. We got to watch this spider. We watched it at yours. And I kind of went back as like to my son's mum and be like, we got to watch this. Like, this is great. Like,
Yeah.
So two Cage things. So
two whole Cage. Well, three now after we watched The Blurst of Times. What was it? The Best of Times.
The Blurst of Times. So let's talk about The Best of Times. I think through this, we can kind of delve into some stuff with the band as well. Who wants to dive on the grenade and tell us what this is about?
Well, I've made some notes.
Lovely.
But I think just from the opening scene, my first note was that Crispin's mum is a bitch.
Okay.
She's well rude. She's rude to him the whole time. That's I've just written it. That's
one of the things I got like from that intro thing. So yeah, what is this about, Harry? What is The Best of Times? Like,
I wish I could really properly tell you.
Basically, it feels like if Skins was filmed in the '80s, but in Winchester. Or like somewhere like mega quaint where like everyone's meant to be like fucking
everyone knows everyone.
Yeah, like Chocolate Rivers and it's like that sort of thing, and like gold falls from the sky, and it's none of the problem, like the whole premise just seems to be like this kid, Crispin, he's like, it's really, really hard being a teenager. And like, you know, if you ever see a teenager, give them the benefit of the doubt. And it's like,
it's like teaching adults how to treat 17-year-olds.
Yeah, but he probably doesn't realize the character that like most teenagers like obviously are cunts.
Yeah.
So it's like, he's got absolutely every right to, they've got every right to kind of be like, mate, cool it down or whatever.
Yeah, leave it out.
Yeah. And it's like, and you saw the fucking state of his room. It's like, yeah, you said his mom's an arsehole or whatever, but like,
his room is a shithole.
His room is an absolute fucking bomb site. But yeah, fuck it, man. Like that's kind of what the premise of the film is, I guess. The episode is. I can see why it didn't really get picked up, to be honest.
Yeah. It's over the place.
It's like a series of vignettes and kind of like small segments, almost like a kind of like variety show.
Yeah, of like one or two line bits.
And what it
don't
kind of
go anywhere.
What it had the vibe of for me was, I'm not sure about you guys, but like like an overlong PSA video.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like some kind of like, You expected one of them to be about like the ills of drugs. Like I wouldn't have been surprised if it's like Kevin. Like Kevin is trying part. Like
yeah. You know, yeah.
Like, well, I think there's a line.
He shot his mom's head off. Like,
yeah. I think there's a line at the start. The fucking kid's in his dirty room and his mum's shouting at him and he's just like, yeah. All adults just think all kids are just on dope. And it's like, I fucking wish I was on dope when I was watching this, man.
This stinks.
Yeah, the people who were making it, not the kids, but the fucking people who were making it were definitely high as fuck.
Well, it very much reeks of like adults trying to write for teenagers.
Yeah. It's boomers for zoomers kind of shit.
Yeah, because at the time, like Cage would have been about 18 years. Like all of them would have actually been teenagers.
I'll tell you what's mental. The only thing which made me think it's not like a Grease situation where there's like fucking pensioners playing school kids is because he looks like a fucking, he looks about 4 years younger than he does now.
Yeah.
The only thing is his voice is like, he sounds younger. That's literally it. And like, he's probably in better, you know, probably know his body better than I do, but like, he sounds like he's in like.
And I feel like he's grown into his teeth a bit more now.
I think he might have new teeth.
Potentially. He's got that Cage money to get some new teeth with.
And new fucking teeth, new hair.
Yeah. He had a good haircut in this, though.
Yeah.
Good flock of seagulls going on, you know?
Well, his intro as well. What did you think of his intro?
It made my back hurt. He was fucking doing some crazy one-armed push-ups, but it looked like he was just trying to hurt himself.
Out of form.
Yeah, showing off.
Yeah, big time.
But yeah, he was just on like fucking, for some reason, he was the only character that was on Muscle Beach. Mm-hmm. But they didn't show anybody else exercising. It was just him.
That's what I think is funny about these sorts of like shows and like films sort of thing, where it's like, oh, it's a, you know, they're all like kind of different in their own way. It's their like Cage, probably the Cage, Nick, the character's called Nick, right? Like
all of them are like their own name.
Oh really? So what do you react to in real life? You react to that on this. Come on, let's make this as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. But like he probably would have bullied that guy who was like trying to get all the girls kind of thing, who just couldn't.
Well, yeah, it's a weird ragtag band of kids.
Yeah. They're trying to tick all the boxes for sure.
Yeah. I don't know, and they did like, you didn't really get a sense of them as a group, apart from there's a very like odd sequence because it's split up into these vignettes. The big thing at the beginning is, hey, the gang need more quarters down at the convenience store. The store clerk is played by Jackie Mason, who, as animation loving Harry pointed out before we started recording,
is Krusty's dad, Rabbi Krostofsky. Yeah. I clocked him immediately. I was like, oh, fucking hell, Krusty's dad's in this.
As Mr. O'Reilly. And I don't want to cast aspersions here, but he does not sound like a Mr. O'Reilly.
Yeah,
like,
he's the least Irish sounding man I've ever heard in my life.
Real quick, when you said Krusty's dad earlier, I immediately thought like Mr. Krabs. And I was there like, I was thinking like...
The father of the Krusty Krab.
Yeah, like, but I was like, why is he a rabbi? Like, but yeah, no, fair enough. Now that's making a lot more links.
Jackie
Mason. It's kind of with his like deadpan drawl throughout this. He's like, hey, your kids need to get off the dope. Stop it with the rock and roll.
It's making you deaf. Yeah. He had a few zingers, to be fair.
He had all the good lines, I reckon.
Yeah, he was very much like he owed somebody a favor.
Yeah. Right?
It's like we need somebody with some clout in here. Jackie, get over it.
And he's not buying tickets to see the Talking Heads anytime soon.
No, there is like a through line throughout this of, and I reckon that we could easily do some dubbing. Could be a great promo in the future. It's like, hey, have you got that new Regal cheer?
We're going to nick that as a bit. Sure.
Yeah. It was already. We've discussed it already.
Big reveal.
I've got to put it on.
His awkward dancing in the shop. Yeah.
He's like, I wish I was deaf.
Hey, you hear that sound? Silence. Yeah. This is what I like.
Yeah, it's what you like when you're my age.
Yeah, with Cage's intro, like, what did you think of, like, because he's kind of espousing all about Rocky, right? It's kind of like...
Yeah, he keeps talking about punching meat and stuff.
What's great about that for me is like a kind of like, I don't know, diehard, like seeing things like, I don't know, Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind or something like that, or yeah, do you know what I mean? Like Alan in The Hangover when he's trying to work, like when he's card counting. Is Nicolas Cage's auntie plays Adrian in the Rocky films. So it's great that like his kind of big first on, like his on-screen thing ever. I like, there's debates out there that he's like an extra in a film, but I don't think that counts. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's the first time he spoke on screen, even if it didn't hit the small screen.
I'm really not covering myself in glory here with my like cinematic or TV knowledge, but I've never seen Rocky and I just assumed Adrian was like a guy, like one of his mates or something.
I also did, yeah.
Yeah. Adrian, his auntie, oh, cool.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was like his fucking, I don't know, the guy he was fighting that he lost against or
something.
Yeah,
something like that.
Oh, you got me again, Adrian.
You know, Adrian is the love interest.
Is it Adrienne?
Yeah, Adrienne, yeah. Oh,
I see.
I mean, to be fair, Sylvester Stallone does.
Yeah.
You know, what he's doing there, but yeah, I thought that was pretty great. Like, overall, I'll start with you, Matt. Like, what did you think of his like of Cage's performance in this? Because like he does get all of them kind of get a little bit of time to shine, especially like him and Crispin Glover, like who kind of went on to have
careers.
Yeah, the rest of them, like from doing a tertiary look on like Wikipedia and stuff like that. Some of them have had careers in other stuff, but nowhere near the kind of like, I don't know, mainstream success.
Yeah, no one else has been on Wogan.
One of them is Nicolas Cage and the other one is George McFly from Back to the Future.
Like,
just a few years later. Like, they get massive amounts of screen time and they both kind of get these monologues and Cage gets like a monologue about the army.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny that he got a monologue about the army and he's there like, what does he say? He's like, oh, you don't think there'll be a war, do you? And it's there like, you're literally Lord of War.
I think I've seen that actually.
I thought Cage was all right. Like, yeah, it was. I thought it was good.
I thought it was funny. He was gutted he couldn't hear about his dad's war crimes, but like, yeah, he's just like, yeah, he's still as erratic as I think he is. Do you know what I mean? Like, although I haven't really seen him in a lot of stuff, I know that he's kind of known for being this kind of bit of a wacky guy, a bit of a wild card. And he definitely came across like a wild card in this. Just kind of, he's either beefing up on the beach or he was trying to pull girls or he was talking about going to the fucking army.
He seemed pretty good at pulling girls, to be fair.
Yeah.
Like he was on that.
But his prospects were all over the place, you know? He was just like, shall I go to Harvard or Yale or the military? And it's like...
Yeah. But like with him, like it's kind of, I don't know, crap as the script is, because it's pretty, you can see in his performance, especially in that like that speech he's given is pretty milquetoast and like pretty rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the kernels of like a great talent.
But are you saying that because you've seen him since kind of thing and you know that he's good? If I don't know, one of the other people in there, one of the other kids or whatever would have like, no, is that rose tinted glasses?
I don't think so, because I think there is like a genuine pathos in the way like he'd like talks about it. And obviously he's directing it basically like talking to you. And there's this kind of like this questioning that I think is quite interesting. And like, you can definitely see where like people would have seen that and gone like, yeah, maybe we'll cast this guy.
Yeah,
and,
like, before. He have like maybe the second most lines in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like he was a big player in this thing, I suppose.
I've got to ask you guys, obviously you guys have played like gigs up and down the country and you've got a tour planned for February.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the portrayal of like there's a kind of a band thread that goes throughout this, and I'm not sure if you guys picked up on this, but there's one of the female characters, Julie, I think she wants to be in a band.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, yeah, is
she's a roadie,
yeah, tasked with lugging stuff about. I'm not sure if you picked up on this. There is a moment she pulls out like a drum hard case from a van and treats the drums terribly. I didn't notice this. I felt my heart sank as somebody is like, do you know what I mean, dabbled being in bands, and kind of had that fear. Like, do you guys like, that's got to be the worst part of being in a band, right? Is all the kind of
moving stuff from moving A to B. Yeah, yeah. I guess.
Rejection.
Yeah. The constant rejection takes a number one over lugging stuff from A to B.
Your muscles hurt, and your feelings hurt a lot of the time.
Yeah, sometimes your fucking kidneys.
Yeah, and your bank. It's pretty cool. Well, because you were like, you said the least realistic thing about the band portrayal was that they got offered eventually $125 to play a school gig
for their first show.
But back in then it's there, like, they couldn't really be there like, oh yeah, I've whacked it up on SoundCloud, like, it's got a, it's had a few listens or whatever.
She managed to barter up from 50 quid to 125 in a phone call.
She's good.
But now that would be like going from like, you want to give me nothing? No, you have to give me fucking £500.
Yeah.
And then I'll play the pub on a Tuesday. It's like, never gonna happen.
What I thought was pretty impressive though with her was that she that was the point they were like, yeah, cool, you can be in the band, because basically they saw that she had some use, kind of thing. Yeah. Obviously, but she'd never practiced with them. They went to the gig and she ripped a fucking solo.
Yeah, I think she should have led with how much she can shred on the guitar, her managerial skills.
So like obviously I don't know this world at all. Like, what is the going rate for gigs? Like,
well, you're lucky to get paid. Yeah, that's the going rate. I mean, I don't know, but you don't often barter with people over the phone and over double your initial amount.
It's normally like, if they're like, oh, actually, can we have £5 more, or can you give us some hummus? And it's there like, no, you're actually not playing the gig anymore.
Yeah, you can have £5 more, but you're not getting any rider and you can't bring any friends in.
So you think, like, maybe seeing this as a teenager would have, like, given you, like, false hopes of
100%.
what it would have been like to be in a band.
Yeah, but no more than, like, School of Rock did for, like, us, I guess. Like, yeah. So they played at, like, fucking 2 o'clock on a fucking Wednesday afternoon or something.
And killed it at the Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Really fucking showed no vacancy what it was for, you know?
Yeah, but have you guys got a song like Teacher's Pet? Come on, lad.
I mean, I wish. I wish.
If we did, then we'd be filling out stadiums.
Yeah, but that song's far too long for us, you know? Yeah. Interest halfway through.
That's the only reason.
Yeah.
If you want to be the teacher's PE, right? Good night, guys. Yeah.
Barely get past the fucking keyboard intro.
What else have we got here on my notes? So with, like, I don't know, as a band, what did you think of the portrayal, like, on screen? Is it cringeworthy, or is it?
Well, it felt like a Back to the Future ripoff a little bit.
Well, it's pre Back to the Future, which is crazy. Mm. Like, if you think about it, Crispin Glover has a whole speech about how his parents met in a band met at a dance years ago. Mm-hmm. And, like, they were doing the twist and stuff like that. So you can only imagine that would have been like the 1950s.
Yeah.
And then the end of this film has somebody, like you said, shredding it on stage, playing the guitar, which is kind of like the big moment. Back to the Future. And it's like an element of, like, was Robert Zemeckis, was he like sent a tape of the Best of Times? Like, as a thing of like, oh, maybe Crispin Glover, it's like your guy.
Yeah, just cherry picked all of his favorite bits. Because
that would have been like the kind of showreel for him. Like, he's like, he could play like a dweeby teenager. This is what we need for the film. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're actually going to nick a bit of this.
That's a good ending.
Yeah, we're going to nick a bit of this. Yeah,
like, oh, that really fucking rocks.
Yeah we're going to like...
Now give me another line.
Yeah, we're going to have Michael J. Fox like hopping it about the stage, shredding on. All you needed was for like Nick Cage's character to be there on the phone being like, hey, I got some music for you.
Or just like cut to him doing the splits on the fucking dance floor or whatever.
He had some moves, actually.
He did, yeah, there. Yeah. He's got some flexibility.
He has. He has. Like, which, like, I don't know, I guess we don't really get to... see that in Dancing until we get to Wild at Heart, but like we kind of do see Cage's like rubber limbed abilities in a lot of his performance. I know, like a big one for us, Max, is Vampire's Kiss. Like that is kind of like a man made of rubber, like the way he's like contorting his body and throwing himself about, or like Raising Arizona, if either of you have seen that. He kind of basically playing, you might like it, Harry, because he's basically playing like a Tex Avery cartoon come to life. So like Wile E. Coyote or something. So like really fun. But it's good to see like the him, I don't know, flexing it about and being stupid. And I think a point that that brings me to is there's a lot of musical sequences in this. What did you guys make of those? Harry, what did you think of the musical sequences?
Oh, they were all jarring. The first one is Dolly Parton, right?
Nine to Five.
Which didn't really make a lot of sense because
they did a car wash, right?
But also,
there's a pretty open goal there. What they could have gone for.
I reckon it's a rights issue.
But like, none of them have 9-to-5 jobs. No. They all have part-time jobs. And that was the whole point.
One of them has three part-time jobs.
He does. Well, but he's still
soon to be two because he knocks over a couple of cans of paint.
That's how you get sacked in the '80s. And then the second one was a Pat Benatar song where they're dancing in a jeans shop. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand how that's got anything to do with denim. But
there's a weird song they sing about like doing chores as well, and like it's kind of like to this weird montage of like chores going wrong. So like a guy falling through a hedge whilst he's mowing the lawn,
but the hedge comes out in a perfect cube.
And a guy picking up an iron hot side to hand.
Yeah. But you don't see him put it down the wrong way up.
But he's like not phased. He's not really phased by it in the way that you would be.
He's not as phased as you would do if you had like that degree burns on your fucking
You'd
hand.
Let it go for starters. You wouldn't hold on to the hot bit. And then the girl who's washing the car, and then it comes back to her in a couple of scenes later, like a couple of clips later, and she's still washing the car, but then somehow the handbrake's been taken off and it's just rolling down the driveway.
Right, destination.
Yeah, that's some real like... Dad's going to be pissed off about that one.
Well, there's some like mad stuff in that. One of the things I noticed in that is clearly they've like called everyone in to do like ADR afterwards. And I'm not sure, again, if it's like my ear is just tuned into his voice, but you can just hear like Cage like caterwauling over the top going like, it's kind of like, just gone like, I don't know, it'd be like you guys in the studio were like, Max, like, let's just go for it again. Just freestyle for us, baby.
Nicky, mate, can you just do some ad libs?
Yeah.
He's just like...
So that kind of, I wanted to talk about like the recording process. That feels like Caged in His Wild overdubs and stuff like that. Like, what is the recording process for you guys like? Is it you two in a room, like is it differed from the EPs, or is it kind of
when we recorded the EPs, we kind of did all the bits separate. So did the drums first, and then laid all the guitars and the vocals and stuff on top of that. But we fucked it up a couple of times, so a couple of the songs just went straight in the bin because we didn't do them right. But they ended up getting recycled and resurfaced later. A few like chunks from stuff we recorded on the EPs have like found a new lease of life in songs on the album. But when we went in to do this one, we just wanted it to sound as close to sort of the live sound as possible. So recorded everything together and then did more guitars and stuff over the top of it and stuff like that. But trying to catch that kind of linking in together and being in the same room and that kind of thing, and not having too many like layers and bells and whistles and like crazy shit going on that we can't replicate while we're trying to play it. So it's like as true to form as we could try and get it, really. But that was the aim.
So like technically, are you like, can you like look into the like the whites of each other's eyes, or are you kind of like got barriers up and, do you know what I mean? Like trying to stop that like bleed in the microphones and stuff like that, or is it kind of like let that stuff basically like bleed into each other and like kind of be a part of the experience of like the song?
I think there was definitely sort of like guitars picked up on your takes kind of thing.
Yeah, on the drum mics and stuff. Yeah.
Because like we were in the obviously in the same room kind of thing. But I don't think there's like too much of that.
Not that that's a bad thing either.
No, that adds
like a kind of
that's
like,
kind of I think that's sort of what we were hoping there'd be a little bit sort
yeah,
of like,
yeah. That's like a texture, little, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, and it's something you don't really have to like it's hard to engineer that in. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's way better to kind of try and capture that in the room than trying to
people do, don't they? They kind of like that they'll like when I don't know, they'll either reamp, do you know what I mean, guitars and stuff like that, and kind of create these weird things. Like you listen to like podcasts like Tape Notes and stuff like that. You like people go, oh yeah, no, we that's all manufactured. We're never in the same room. It's recording over lockdown. Separate houses. How long does you said they're short songs. How long does an album like yours take to record? Like was it a short process?
We did it in 2.5 days.
Wow.
At Brighton Electric. So did I think basically all the drums and the kind of guide guitar parts on the first day, which was kind of that was the half day.
Yeah.
And then came in the next day, did a bunch more guitars and bits and bobs, and then started doing all the shouting.
Yeah.
And then the last day we got our mates and I finished off all the shouting and stuff like that, which was a bit of a task. We left quite a few to do on the last day and we were both losing our voices quite badly, but
yeah, I think there's definitely like a you can hear like my voice getting very weathered by the end of the album. But it's sexy, husky sexy.
Yeah, husky sexy. But I think it's a learning curve really. It's something we're going to take into account next time we go and record and just make it so that we don't do all of my singing parts first and then leave all of Max's, because it's quite disproportionate and Max does a lot more singing than I do. So
What was there ever like that feeling, because there's been such this kind of prolonged time between like the album being recorded, of like was there a thought of yours being like, oh, I could go back in and like redo those
not necessarily like that, but it's like it's more like, and like I know we've spoken about it before where we'll listen to the album one day and be like, I'm really like proud of this, and then other days you listen to it and be there like, this is fucking shit.
Yeah. Really, like, I mean, yeah, so we finished it in January. I think we got, like, the mixes and the masters and all that stuff back in, like, I want to say sort of March, April time. Yeah. And then for the next sort of 6 months solid, we were, it was almost like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off of, like, yeah, this is really good. This is, like, you know, I'm happy to put my name on this. And then, like, Monday would roll around and be like, I fucking hate all of this and I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
And then... yeah, the next week it'll be like, oh, this is fucking sick, actually. I quite like this. But yeah, just I think that was just from not having any other input apart from us two listening to it over and over and over again. So we can't tell if it's good or not.
Well, have you been playing a lot of the songs live from the album?
Pretty much all of them apart from like two
There's
or three.
Two that we've never played live, which we'll be playing on the tour. A lot of them...
Most, to be honest, a lot of them we because we recorded, sorry to cut you off there, because we recorded the EPs and then pretty much started writing straight away, then played our first gig. So like a few of them we've literally played on like all of our gigs.
Yeah. And they were sort of like, we finished the EPs and stuff and we're like, okay, let's go play some shows. But there's at least two or three songs that we don't like on the EPs that we're not going to play live. So we're like, we have to pad this out somehow. So we just started writing. But we write really fast anyway, really. Mm-hmm. Like if we've got ideas, we tend to just stick them out until they're done and they come together pretty quickly just because it's easy to communicate with just the two of us. And everything's a fucking minute long. So it's like, we get past the minute 30. It's like, right, that's done. It's on to the next one.
Yeah.
I'll say that as somebody who's like listened to the songs and kind of, obviously listeners might not know this, but probably do if you're a long time listener, obviously we're friends. Like, so obviously like,
yeah, it's not weird you're in our house,
but obviously like literally they're so easy, and because stuff happens in the songs just sometimes just the once, it's so easy to just be like, oh, I really love that moment, whether it's something that happened like a melody or like a kind of like some kind of hook, even if it's not like a chorus line, and then you go, oh, that only happened once. Like,
I love a tease.
I found myself when you released like Castanets, and there was, I think, kind of all of the singles, and my Spotify will just like play the playlist on loop, and it's like, oh, I've like easily just listened to this song like 20 times in a row. Like, it's like, there's something beautiful to that. Like, as somebody like that's messed around with music and stuff like that, like, I love kind of really exhausting, like as many ideas in a short amount of time. Yeah,
I tried our best to make it so that no one like
gets bored.
You can dislike it, that's fine, but like, don't want you to be bored.
Yeah, because like, I mean, we've kind of boxed ourselves in to this kind of mindset now, where like sometimes we'll check out a new band or something, and we'll get like a couple of minutes in and be like, oh, this song's well fucking long.
Yeah,
only 3 minutes, but like...
we got asked to play a gig, and it was like with a band who like, yeah, we played, and it was like, I don't know, we like them, it was really good kind of thing, but we listened to like their most played song on Spotify.
It was where we were recording the album.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, we were really in the thick of everything is 1:30.
And like, it got like, I don't know, it got to what we thought must have been about 4 minutes, and we were like, this probably should have ended by now. And we looked, and it was like 1:15 or something.
Yeah,
it was like, this is actually stupid.
Yeah, we're just ruining our own attention spans at the same time.
Yeah. But
like, that's the kind of music we gravitate towards. I mean, I do personally.
Well, you're creating music for the kind of like, I mean, all of your songs can fit into a reel on Instagram. All of your songs can fit into the algorithm perfectly.
So like, theoretically, we should be very marketable.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to play Wembley.
Yeah, 15-minute set at Wembley. Yeah.
Well, like one of the singles we were playing for a while, Behavioral Patterns, and initially that was only like 40 seconds long.
Mm-hmm.
And we played it on a tour that we did, and with a couple of like some our mates' bands. And then every single time we played it, they were like, "You need to make that bit longer because it's annoying that it ends that soon." And that's the only time we've ever made anything slightly longer.
And now it's 1:10.
Yeah, and that's 1:10. So we did the thing that they liked 2 more times, but it's because we were only doing it once to be fucking difficult and just to be a bit fucking.
Obtuse.
This will be funny. Yeah. Most of the time, the mentality is, will this be funny for us and no one else? And if it is, then it tends to make the cut.
that is very much like the attitude on this podcast. Listeners will know this from Christmas. You guys may not, like, don't expect you to listen to every episode. I had a joke that the film we were covering was Last Christmas, and then I created a loop that probably went on for way too long, where it said, last Christmas we talked about the film Klaus. This Christmas we're talking about Last Christmas we talked about the film Klaus. This Christmas we're talking about the film Last Christmas, and just had that going on for me, like, way longer than I should have done.
A real shithouse bit, yeah.
But for me, like, I was like, that makes, like, when I thought of that, I was like, that is funny. Do you know what I mean?
I kind of,
I'm like, let's make the bit go on. Let's, like, do you know what I mean? Let's make this bit go on longer than a Regal Cheer song. Yeah.
I remember when, like, I think it was just before last April Fool's Day, and you, like, tweeted, like, I've got the best guest I've ever got coming on. Like, it's an actual film star or something like that. And then eventually it dropped, and it was when he did the one with the pig.
Yeah. That was a great bit. That also went on for a little bit too long, but it was funny because it went on for too long.
Yeah, I
just really lean into it, man. I love it.
I very much have the rake gag from The Simpsons. It's my kind of benchmark. It's Stuart Lee and Sideshow Bob and the Rakes is kind of like what I'm going, like, let's just keep going until like people are exhausted, and then they get to a point and go, oh, actually, this is funny again. Like, let's do it.
Like, so you got a focus group. It's like, how many times can you get whacked in the face and grumble until people want to turn it off? It's like, just before that, that's when we'll end the bit.
Yeah. For me, it's like, yeah, let's have a full 45-minute conversation with a pig. And what, like
you on the abattoir soundboard.
Yeah, I was going to say, you had some real guttural noises as well. It wasn't just like nice little cute little oinks. It was proper, it sounds like you were gutted.
A peek behind the curtain on that is, I have like a kind of soundboard on my recording device here, and I actually like programmed in a load of sounds beforehand and recorded that live. So it wasn't like I didn't like really write anything. I just kind of like, you know what? I'm going to be in the mindset of I'm interviewing a pig here.
This is true improv.
Yeah. This is the ramblings of a madman. So back to the ramblings of a madman, the best of times. So what I like, is there any other like major moments in this that you feel like we should dive into, or is it kind of have we?
There is one thing that I noticed that I feel like I need to bring up. It's not necessarily Cage related, but did you guys notice the Charmin advert?
Yeah.
At the beginning?
Yeah.
And it had
old
like
branding.
Old branding, but it was also like a weird negative, like transparent background, and it had like proper like demonic baby on the thing instead of like a cute little koala. And I saw that, I was watching it at work, and I was like, well, I was eating my sandwich, and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
They've chosen the worst picture to try and advertise fucking toilet roll.
Yeah, do you know what makes me think of wiping my ass? Negatives of babies.
Yeah. And like, what, zero eyeballs.
what makes it weirder as well is it's not like just kind of a baked in ad. It's like, to the YouTube like rip of like VHS rip of this, it's Charmin, like it's like Charmin presents the best of the time. So like it's kind of interesting. Obviously this would have aired on TV, like, and like I kind of did some digging, couldn't really find any like reactions to it at the time, but like I imagine all of them negative.
Yeah,
like,
I don't think their sales numbers jumped after this came out.
No.
I'm sure.
I'd rather have a stinky bum.
Yeah. I'll use Andrex instead.
I'll use my hand. one of the things I wanted to ask you guys is, which of the gang, like, do you see your, like, if you kind of close your eyes and think, which of these guys is me, like who do you relate to, Harry?
The guy who tried to be in a band for ages.
I actually think it is her. Yeah. I'm the 14-year-old roadie.
What about you, Max?
Are you
the ladies man calling up
the guy with the little black book,
right? Yeah. Kevin Cortez, so like his kind of whole bit in this is just him trying to find a date for the dance, and it goes to some, takes a weird avenue. Yeah, it's a weird cul-de-sac.
He sort of hassles women pretty on the fly. Yeah. I mean, he nearly gets himself in a sticky situation by hassling a 10-year-old.
I'm
not that guy.
Yeah, he's not afraid to scrape the barrel.
that guy, like, he's obviously like some, you can see like the germ of a joke there, but it's just like, it's just delivered poorly and like ultimately a bad joke. He's like a miscommunication. Like, oh, you're a 10. He's like, how old are you? He's like, oh, you're 10.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not me.
Like the voice wouldn't give it away. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
I don't know. I guess I'm probably the, the main character, I suppose. I don't know.
Crispin, always getting stick from your mum about a messy room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, dropping like things on your dog.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a dog, to be fair. It's a lot smaller. She does like pigging out on my bed.
The dog's name was Max.
Every dog's called Max, man. I swear to fucking God, if I'm walking like my dog on the beach, it's like I feel like the most like popular like person in the world, and everyone's just shouting at fucking spaniels. No one's shouting at Max.
Me? Yeah. Me again?
Yeah. Maybe you are the kid with the little black book then, mate.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Yeah, fuck it. I'm the future nonce.
You heard it here first, guys. So to kind of close off the conversation about the best of times and kind of like Cage and TV, because something like we haven't seen, like he's never, especially when we're living through since The Sopranos, like I said, we're living like the golden age of television, like, and as we see as film fans and stuff like that, like the money seems to be like taken away from movies a lot of the time, and it's like, and the talent seems to be like migrating over to TV. But Cage has never done it, apart from, like, as we said, like that, the history of swear words, which is kind of like...
That was more of a hosting job.
Yeah, a bit of a misnomer, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not really, like, it's not a dramatic TV show, like, but...
He was playing himself. He wasn't...
Yeah, like, and there was a time when he was going to play Joe Exotic in a TV show that, like, fell through.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about that.
I think it was for the best. Like, I think it
we didn't need any more fucking Tiger King.
And it very quickly, like, shook out that, like, Joe Exotic didn't need any more spotlight. He was not a good guy. Like, but yeah, like, what kind of, if I don't know, where do you think Cage would like suit in TV? Whether it is like, could you see him in like one of these prestige TV shows, like the kind of Sopranos or something like that? Or
I could, like, maybe, but like, I was thinking not necessarily because it'd be good, but imagine like Nick and Dex and Saturday Night Takeaway.
So like a variety show.
Yeah, yeah. And he just gets like, you know, in the mid-2000s, gets like Fight Star up or something like that. And he's just like fucking, you know.
Doing pranks.
Doing like, pranks on people. Yeah. Like, you know, Nick and Dom in the bungalow. Just like, well, him just doing like a really, really like subtle bogeys in like a fucking morgue or something.
bogeys. Bogeys.
I think he would do well if he was playing, what's his name, in the IT Crowd, you know, Noel Fielding's character. Is it Richmond, the weird little vampire guy? I think he would suit that character pretty well.
Yeah,
I could see that, him being a bit more of an erratic vampire, but that might be a funny one.
Yeah, he loves vampires. He loves the Peter Lowe in Vampire's Kiss, and yeah, he's going to be playing Dracula in Renfield in April, so... Yeah, I could definitely see him as like some little goth in the dark.
Yeah, don't see him for like 8 episodes and he's just in a cupboard the whole time. Like, oh, fuck.
That'd be perfect. That'd be perfect. And there is something like I'd love to have seen Cage, especially now, like in some kind of like Sopranos kind of thing. Just him.
I was trying really hard to think of what Sopranos character he could be though.
Or just like if it's like a guest star or like a kind of, you know, like how Buscemi like just turns up for a bit in that show.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, imagine Cage in like a vest and like tracksuit bottoms. Like,
yeah, just rinsing gabagool and talking about killing people. Yeah,
sipping double espressos with the guys. Obviously, he's got the Italian-American like heritage. Well, we've never really seen him like lean into that massively. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I would love to have seen him as like one of the villain characters, like fucking, what's his name? Ralphie.
What about,
he was really erratic and like unpredictable, so I think he would have been good as that.
What about animation? Is there anything like you could hear his voice?
Oh.
Yeah, I'd love to hear him as Bart Simpson. That'd be fucking hectic.
Hi, caramba.
Yeah, you put Nancy Cartwright out of a job. Maybe I mean they could definitely write him as like a dodgy robot in Futurama, because you've got like a bunch of fucked ones, like you've got like Roberto, the one that's like stabbing people, like hedonism bot and shit. Like, you could definitely have like a well-mental Nicolas Cage-voiced robot in like, they're rebooting Futurama, so who knows? Fingers crossed. But
or even as like one of Fat Tony's cronies.
Yeah.
Well, I love about that is Fat Tony is voiced by Joe Mantegna, who is in The Godfather Part 3.
Hey, really? So,
yeah. And he does the voice. He narrates The Godfather audiobook on Audible. So like, I was there listening to it. I was like, fuck, man. It's like Fat Tony read you The Godfather. It's just so good. Like, it's worth it for that.
Yeah.
And then he pulls back the sheet and there's a horse's head.
Make me a Manhattan.
Well, what's great? Yeah, well, obviously, what's great about that is obviously there is the he's obviously cast as Fat Tony because of the connection to The Godfather. Yeah. So, but it all kind of comes full circle, and like, especially being the age we are, like, kind of like, yeah, early 30s, like, The Godfather Part 3 is there, but he'll forever be Fat Tony, and
yeah, exactly,
the guy from Baby's Day Out as well. I'm not sure if you've ever seen that film. No. Just me on this one. Let's.
Do you really think I've seen that?
Baby's Day Out. Yeah.
One,
really.
Is it a film?
Yeah,
it fell at the first hurdle.
No, you might say it as a kid, like or Criminal Minds. He's a big player in Criminal Minds as well. Will's up in 30, guys. As we kind of anything Cage related, I always ask 3 questions. The first of which being, does Cage have bad hair in this, Max?
No, I rate it. It's good hair.
It's good.
He's got a good barnet in this.
It's sort of like hair that's like coming back into sort of like.
Yeah, it's now back in the zeitgeist, I suppose, of having that haircut again. Yes. But he's got good locks, this boy. For a weird like meathead jock character that he kind of plays, who looks a lot older than he actually is and is just exercising all the time, you wouldn't think he'd have like full flock of seagull's hair and like fucking an absolute barnet on him. But he's got good hair in this one.
Good hair, bad teeth.
Yeah, good hair. Yeah.
Does he do a crazy voice? Obviously, like throughout his career, he's done some mad voices. Obviously, we mentioned Vampire's Kiss earlier. Like, that's cuckoo bananas, but I love it. But
I don't think he does like a mad voice in the same way that like we think of a Cage mad voice. But I think it's just mad that he's got that voice.
Yeah,
I don't know why that really like spun me out.
He's like a 17-year-old with a 40-year-old man's voice, isn't it?
And does he freak out? Obviously, like, he isn't yet Cage. He's Coppola in this, but do we get a Cage freak out in any way?
I mean, on the dance floor.
Yeah, he really freaks out. And I feel like he kind of has a bit of, like, not a freak out, again, in the way that we know Cage to, but more of, like, a bit of an internal crisis, which he peep shows to the camera kind of thing.
Yeah, like, when he's breaking the fourth wall.
It's more of, like, a sort of sad early life crisis, but
and all the scenes in which he's exercising, it looks like he's doing it at gunpoint. Like it's all very frantic and like I need to get these crunches in right now or I'm getting a fucking bullet in the head.
Well, that very much like reeked of we've got a day to film all this stuff on the beach. Yeah. Like you better be pumping iron like your life depends on delivering the lines at like rapid speed. Like let's get through this. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I reckon they had less time to shoot this than you guys had to record your album. Like,
probably. Yeah.
This is very much like the Regal Cheer approach to TV making, I think. So, yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys on. Tell us a little bit about, obviously you guys are going on tour. This will be, again, a peek behind the curtain and kind of maybe a bombshell for you guys. This will be released tomorrow, so that will be the 31st of February, January.
In that case, our debut album Cans is out on Friday, February 3rd on Beth Shalom Records, so you can listen to it everywhere on you stream stuff, or you can buy it on vinyl and cassette on the Bandcamp. And then we're going on tour the following week, starting on the 10th in Norwich.
Then we're going to Newport, then Bristol, Birmingham, Manchester, Glasgow, Dundee, Sheffield, Leeds, and then Brighton and London.
So, yeah, in the Brighton and London shows, we're doing the album in full, in order. They're kind of trying to make them a little bit special.
Nice.
But, we'll be playing basically all the songs, I think.
Yeah, all the songs that we've ever played live and that we're probably going to play live will be played. So those deep cuts probably aren't going to get a look in.
Yeah.
But if for whatever reason you're listening to this and that was the basis to buying a ticket, so maybe send us a DM or something.
Yeah, tell us to play the songs that we don't like. Because otherwise we'll continue not to play them. Yeah.
If that's make or break, and specifically if you live in Birmingham, please buy a ticket to that.
Yeah.
We'll play whatever you want. We'll cover fucking...
Yeah, honestly.
Toto, who cares?
Birmingham heads, get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get out there. Support the boys. We're going to be on tour of another great band. Really big, really clever.
So it's Jordan and Jared. Used to be in a band called Gender Roles. After that fell into the abyss, they started this new project, and it's really good.
They snaked me. They said, do you want to play guitar in one song? Because Jared's got to play a solo, and then it turns out I'm playing the whole set now. So,
So if you want to come to this tour and see Max really tired because he's doing double duty every night, then I think you need to come see it in person.
Again, especially if you're in Birmingham.
Especially if you're in Birmingham.
He's the one man... the Bronx, Mariachi El Bronx. He's in double duty. All tour, baby. But he doesn't get to play. He doesn't get to wear a sombrero for either.
But again, if you live in Birmingham, that'll make you come a will.
Amazing. Well, yeah, let's hope they've got a Las Iguanas or that you can purchase.
Get down the ball ring, get to Dead Wax Sounds.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, yeah, thanks so much, guys, for coming in and caged in with me.
Thank you very much, mate.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Cheers.
Well, there we have it, guys. We may not have had the best of times with the best of times, but I certainly had the best of times talking to Max and Harry. Thank you once again, guys, for coming on and joining me. Thanks. If you're listening, Max, Harry, you're absolute bloody legends. And yeah, if hearing about their process of how they recorded their album, like them as a band, they are quite self-deprecating. But please be assured that the music is fantastic, and I really recommend you going out, buying, streaming, and listening to their debut album, Cans, because it's really great. I've heard it. I've had the absolute fortunate pleasure of listening to it, and I'm a big fan. Not only just because they're my friends, and it's amazing sometimes. It's like with podcasting. It's amazing when your friends do amazing things, and they're very much in that camp for me. And yeah, you can follow Regal Cheer. I forgot to ask them in the episode, but I'm going to do it for them. I'm going to do a bit of admin for my boys, Regal Cheer, right now, and let you know where the best place is to find those guys online. So you can find them on Instagram at Regal Cheer. So that is REGALCHEER. And you can find them on Twitter as well, again, at Regal Cheer. So please be sure to head on over there for all that good stuff with those guys. And if you enjoyed this episode, and I don't know, maybe you feel differently about the best of times. Maybe you had the best of times with the best of times. Well, you want to let me know that. You can find me on all the socials. So that is Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd, and TikTok, all at Caged In Pod. Or you can drop me an email, which is cagedinpod@gmail.com. As for next week on this here podcast, I know we said we're kind of, we are kind of stepping out of cagedary territory, but at the same time, kind of not. We're still kind of in the cagey sphere before we get back to some Coppola Connections goodness. I will be joined by Andrew Morgan Smith to discuss the score for The Old Way. Andrew Morgan Smith is the composer of that score, and we had a fantastic chat about his kind of process, the love-hate relationship composers have with temp scores. We kind of get into all of it, the way in which like modern technology helped to kind of track this film and record the band remotely and the orchestra remotely. It's really fascinating stuff, and I assure you, you'll enjoy it, and you can find out when that is coming out on stream as well. So even if you haven't seen the film, I would definitely recommend listening to the score, because it kind of harkens back to classical studio westerns, but kind of has this unique flavor that Andrew brings to it. And we get into all of that next week. So if you enjoyed this episode or any other episode of the podcast, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this right now. Remember to always leave 5 stars. 4 if you're feeling a bit stingy. Never 3, never 2, and certainly not 1. And in your review, always make sure to let me know what you think Bill Murray says to Scarlett Johansson at the end of Lost in Translation. I want to know. I also want to know which favourite Nicolas Cage film. One or the other. Whichever you want to do. Or just exalt me with how great you think this podcast is. Because let's be honest, sometimes, guys, our self-esteem needs a little bit of a lift. So, as ever, I've been Petros Patsilivas. I've been Caged In. You've been amazing. And I'll catch you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is presented by the Breadcrumbs Collective, home of the Pod Charles Cinecast, Caged In Coppola Connections, A Drooptown Limerie Maine, Franchised, and many more to come. Our shows are all presented ad-free and made possible by listeners like you. Please support our shows by subscribing, leaving ratings and reviews, and becoming patrons at patreon.com. If you'd like to learn more about Breadcrumbs, head over to breadcrumbscollective.com.
Breadcrumbs. It's more than a podcast network. It's family.